We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
He's New England's preeminent source on everything Patriots.
They don't have a house in Connecticut.
I have been told the same thing Curran has been told.
The one and only Tom E. Curran. Tom Curran joining us.
I bend over to Tommy Curran.
Tom Curran joining us from NBC Sports Boston.
It's time for Tuesday with Tom.
I'm surprised about Tom E. Curran.
So why is he so damn special that we have to call him Tom E. Curran?
Curran. On Dale and Keith.
They don't have a house in Connecticut.
Keep on laughing.
Joining us on the Harbor One Hotline, as he does every Tuesday, is our buddy from NBC Sports Boston, Tom E. Curran. Hello, Tom.
Dale, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing great, thanks.
Is your buddy Rich with you?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Yes. You better believe it.
Tom wrote a piece yesterday on NBC Sports Boston. The headline is, "Will Cam Newton conquer Patriots offense in time to start by week one?" I think it's fairly safe to say that we are unanimous in our opinion that, assuming he's healthy, Cam Newton is the most talented quarterback on the New England Patriots. But you make the case that he's up against it a little bit to be ready to start week one here.
A little bit, yeah. I mean, we are in total and full agreement, and I believe the Patriots are as well. You have an elite quarterback who can do things that the other two guys can't yet nor never will. And he's going to eventually, that talent is going to win out. But when you look at the landscape of how often is a starting quarterback added to a team on June 28th? Never. A lot of factors influence the fact that he ended up here. But those factors also contribute to at least a proposal by the NFLPA. The first 31 days of practice will only have 20 and then 40 players involved. That's beginning July 28th. And then there will only be 8 padded practices and 10 practices. I think Cam Newton will get it. I think he will understand the offense. I think he'll show his poise, leadership, and athletic ability. Just will he be in the position to be the best option available day one? And are you basing that on, well, this is how good he is? He hasn't really shown it to us, but he's going to.
If there's no preseason games, who does that benefit more, Cam Newton or Jarrett Stidham?
I would say Stidham. I mean, again, I'm throwing darts and just hypothesizing on what I think is a unique situation that we don't often see. A quarterback being added in June who's this friggin' good, potentially, for that little money. So, and I asked myself, and I talked about this on TV yesterday, would I be saying this if it was Matt Stafford? You know, I think it's good to audit, you know, what we're saying here, especially now. Am I treating Cam differently as always? Not good? But it is a far different offense that the Patriots have run. I would have looked at Stafford saying, okay, well, he's a drop back guy coming into a drop back offense. Cam is a move around guy, but I think the Patriots were going to change anyway. It would probably benefit Stidham more if there was no opportunity at all for the Patriots to see Cam Newton playing in full contact 11-on-11 against another team.
See, I think the way I would look at it is Newton obviously has the resume and he is overall more talented. And to me, he would be the starter. And so there's less opportunity for both him to play poorly and for Stidham to play really well. So you just kind of go with the guy that you think. And even if the playbook's not exactly where you want it to be, McDaniels will say, all right, we're going to run 60% of the playbook the first couple of weeks, but it's still with Newton, and it's still better than 100% or 90% with any of the other guys.
Yeah, all of these things are really all in play. And to me, what will be interesting is to see when practice begins, if we're out there, however many of us media are out there, mm-hmm. who's taking the first team reps with Edelman, N'Keal Harry, Mohamed Sanu? And who's taking the second team reps? You know, what's it look like in 11 on 11? Who's out with who at the beginning? On one hand, the Patriots are steadfast in saying, we're going to have a competition here. We're not handing out starting positions regardless of what a player's done in the past. And that is status quo. But I think the presumption also is that Cam Newton is their best quarterback on the roster.
It's been interesting to compare the other sports who are attempting to come back here and the issues that they've been dealing with. Testing issues galore for Major League Baseball. Testers not showing up, results being delayed far beyond what they should be. The National Hockey League seems to have a fairly good hand on testing. The NBA has as well. Do we know who's running the NFL's program? Because they need to stay away from Major League Baseball's group.
Well, Alan Sills, who is a neurosurgeon and has done a really good job, you know, from folks I've spoken to at the upper levels in the NFL, they're happy with the work that he's done on the CTE and getting the NFL in the right direction with concussion protection and protocols and everything else. But he is their medical director, and he's not an epidemiologist. I think the NFL will be in good stead, and honestly, I think they'll be in good stead in part. And Jed York, I believe, not Jed York, the older York, John York, I believe, in San Francisco, is kind of the head of their medical as well. I think that locally, Jonathan Kraft, his involvement in Mass General as being the chairman of the board there, his involvement at that facility and in a place that did flatten the curve, Massachusetts, in no small part because of what he's done, his involvement with the revolution, I think all of those things recommend him as hopefully somebody who is kind of at the forefront of the process. Guys are going to test positive, whether or not hospitalization, and I think that's one interesting thing to understand if you look at even the CDC website. If we're going to what if to the point where we're trying to get to some place where a dire result happens, it's not going to take very long. The players who contract it, only in infinitesimally small likelihoods would even need hospitalization. But if we say, what if they go home to a respiratory issue, a spouse with a respiratory issue or an elderly parent, well, then, yeah, that player is going to be compromised. But to me, how soon or how able the NFL is ready to move ahead, or baseball or any sport, is there's risk that has to be assumed. How much are we going to allow? But you're right, Dale. We're talking about logistics. And if you can't get the logistics right, right, you're dead in the water.
And we're also talking about the sport of the four majors that probably has the most peril, just endemic to it anyway.
Unquestionably. Right. Unquestionably. And, you know, if you're a defensive lineman, and again, I keep coming back to that, because there's no sport which asks a player to be morbidly obese, except for the NFL and sumo wrestling.
Yeah.
But we don't have that here.
No.
So we're talking about defensive linemen and offensive linemen who are undeniably morbidly obese. They're in great shape. They can run, but the taxing nature of it to their body. Look, Vince Wilfork's, both of his parents died fairly young because of diabetes. He was a very big man. If I'm Vince Wilfork, would I want to be on the field with that? Because knowing that I might have a different outcome than most others. So these are things that need to be weighed by some of those players. And I'm saying this in the next breath after what I just said about the infinitesimally small odds. But, yeah, it's a lot to work through.
Have you gotten a sense at all from either players you've talked to or coaches or anything like that that there might be some hesitance to return? I mean, I look at the NBA, for example, where they seemed like everybody was on board until you're like, oh, wait a minute, it's a couple of weeks we got a report, and now I'm going to pay more close attention to it, and you have a bunch of players dropping out. Baseball, to me, is a little bit different because, again, I guess you got to take these guys at their word, but I have a feeling that only getting a third of their salaries is a pretty significant reason why a number of them have decided to sit out. Any word on what you would expect some of these NFL players' decisions would be?
I think that the NFLPA is finding a spot right now where it's able to flex its muscles in a way it really hasn't in the past. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing, because you should have the protections of the players at heart. But just looking at some of the media guidelines that are being put out, looking at some of the proposals that the players have put forth, you know, during the conditioning, they only want 20 players in the facility at a time. In the first phase, second phase, when there are no contact, 7-on-7 type practices, they only want 40 players in the facility. They're making some demands because they do have a great deal of leverage right now. So I think that that concern by the PA and your people who are speaking for you, Devin McCourty, Matthew Slater here locally, they're going to pass on to the players. Look, you should be concerned and you should be wary. So I think that's going to pass on. I talked to, you know, a couple players about the bubble, and they didn't like the idea. And I don't blame them, not only for the separation that you're going to feel from your family and friends and loved ones, but also for the optics of it. You know, go live in a bubble, separate yourselves, and come out on Sundays to entertain us. It's not what we're looking for, I think, as a society right now.
Patrick Mahomes made the big news splash yesterday with the announcement of his new contract extension with the Kansas City Chiefs. And even given that the $503 million that Lee Steinberg wants prospective clients to believe it's worth and what it's really worth, it's beside the point. It's a crap ton of money for a guy who's probably worth it.
Yep, probably worth it. He's the best player in the league, but Andrew Luck would have been worth it a few years ago. It's such a sport that I don't blame. I think the Chiefs, both guys did well. You can't say a guy who made $500 million
right.
didn't do well, but I think that both sides did well, because if the cap continues to go up and the profits and revenues continue to go up for the NFL, then there will be a time at which Mahomes' contract could be obsolete or in line with everyone else. Does Dak Prescott come to the table asking for that? He will. He shouldn't. He will.
Right. He'll get laughed out of the room.
Right.
I know. Or Deshaun Watson. And that's the weird thing. And that's why you just spent 20 years with a sixth-round pick as the best quarterback in football with few blips, and he was making less than everyone else. Now we'll see how a dynasty is pursued with a quarterback making this much money. We saw what happened when the Indianapolis Colts in 2012 had to go to Curtis Painter because they didn't have Peyton Manning, and I think they won two games, which set them up for Andrew Luck. How will Kansas City, I'm writing about this right now, how do you think Chris Jones is feeling today, the franchise defensive end?
Right.
Or Travis Kelce or Hill, who I think has already been redone. But all of these guys, that's what the Patriots were able to do, because Brady only once in his career, and that was in 2010, had the fattest contract in the NFL.
Now, there were stats that came out right around the Super Bowl where you looked at the most recent Super Bowl-winning quarterbacks and what their percentage of the cap was. And for the most part, it was pretty low. Or even teams that, you know, made it to the Super Bowl and lost, you know, whether it was rookie deals or whatever else it is. I still look at, even with all that information, that you do have to pay somebody, and the best player in the league is probably a good place to start. So do you feel like paying somebody at the top end of the market is still good business, or is it smarter to, you know, try to spread your money around?
I think it's smarter to spread your money around. I mean, Joe Flacco is no Patrick Mahomes.
No.
But what ends up happening is a tidal wave of pay the man comes crashing down on your franchise. And we saw that in 2012 with Joe Flacco, who we knew what Joe Flacco was then, and he proved to be over the next few years, but he signed the most lucrative quarterback contract in the league, and that team went into a funk for the next 7 years, in large part because of Joe Flacco's contract.
Right, but Flacco was never the league MVP.
No, but he was a Super Bowl-winning quarterback.
Okay, so it was, you know, Eli Manning and Nick Foles, and he's more in line
regardless
with Trent Dilfer.
How well the player plays, once you start paying that money to a single player, it compromises the rest of the team. I don't think it's coincidence that teams with less than the highest paid player on their roster are winning the Super Bowl.
But what would you do then? Would you not want them?
I'd play it out. I'd play it out to the very end. I would have played it out.
Risk losing them?
Yeah, start planning.
Yeah.
And that's the difference with the sixth, unless he's going to take less, which Brady was able to be convinced of again, because sixth-round pick, 199th overall, Come on, Tom. We're going to give you a bump.
But even the Patriots, they didn't play it out, though, right? I mean, they did this most recent time, and then he was gone. But they never let him get to free agency. Like, that never happened.
No, but they were able – what I'm saying is they never played it out because Brady wasn't able to – was willing to not play it out because of he was and where he came in.
Mm-hmm.
Tom, hey, we did you a solid, man. The reason we're so good is because you were a sixth-round pick, and we were able to give you that chance. We got to be good everywhere. So can you take this, which is still – better than most, but not the highest. And they did that in 2002. They did it in 2005. In 2010, they anteed up. And then in 2013, they got him on a very team-friendly contract. But he kept doing those, I think, because of where he came from and his sentiment about being a cog in the machine as opposed to the machine itself.
Do you think there's any chance that, assuming that there is an NFL season this year, and we're going under that assumption, that for the opening game, the football team in Washington is operating under the same nickname that they've had for years?
I don't think so. Do you?
No, I do not. Daniel Snyder's been, you know, fighting this thing forever, but it seems like the money is stacked against him here.
Yeah, and read a really interesting Washington Post story the other day. You know, Bruce Allen has been the guy who's taken the slings and arrows. He was kind of a authoritarian figure there. But now that Daniel Snyder doesn't have Bruce Allen there anymore, Ron Rivera, who's been there for 15 minutes, now is the voice and face and conscience of the organization. Meanwhile, Snyder's been in the Bahamas and Europe during all this. So he's basically hiding under his desk and avoiding this conversation. It's not a hard conversation. It's just, I mean, it's an offensive nickname. We can talk about Indians and Seminoles and Cherokees and, you know, Warriors and all those other ones. But this is citing a physical attribute or physical characteristic of a group. It's going to be mind-boggling in 2050 when we look back and say, still in 2020, they were calling them the Redskins?
Yeah.
Holy crap. So they have to change it. It's long overdue. It's made me exceptionally uncomfortable, as I'm sure you are, when you really think of what the nickname connotes.
I try not to say it.
I say Skins. I wrote Skins. You know, there's times I've written Redskins over the last few years, but generally I write either Washington or Skins.
So what's a better chance that they have a new name by week one or Antonio Brown is on a roster week one?
New name.
Yeah.
Antonio Brown. See, wouldn't it be better if they just handed down whatever suspension he was going to have?
100%. We've been saying that for months.
No matter how bad it is, just say it.
What do you got? Let's hear it. It's bizarre.
The same thing with the Patriots' foolishness that, you know, came to pass last week with that penalty. But, you know, I don't understand. And they always have an opportunity, and now they have a very plausible one. We've got a pandemic to deal with. Okay, how long does it take? You did the investigation.
Right.
Just it's crazy. Stamp something. Uh-huh. Say 5 games. Boom, done. And we'll see in week 8. But, yeah, I think the Redskins will have a new and brand spanking new and very welcome nickname before.
I know it's a new and unique time that we live in, but if you go to ESPN.com, there's a headline, and I'm going to read you the headline. Eagles Jackson after posts. I don't hate Jews. Probably not a good look for DeSean Jackson here, huh?
I know.
Bizarre to look at what the posts were. First, he attributed something about Jews blackmailing black Americans and attributed it somehow to Adolf Hitler.
Right.
Which I don't.
Did, I just Adolf Hitler
any
didn't
of that
say.
Combination of words in a sentence. What are you doing?
No.
But what is interesting, and Mike Florio pointed it out, you had Riley Cooper in 2013 uttering the N-word in anger. And as contrite as he was, the Eagles moved on and gave him, you know, basically a reprimand. And the next year they gave him a contract extension. So I think Riley Cooper seemed to have a better grasp on the inappropriateness and ugliness of what he said than DeSean Jackson has shown, where he's like, oh, people are misinterpreting what I said. But, you know, if you penalize Jackson in a way that's not similar to Cooper, now we've opened a new Pandora's box.
Right.
So, you know, I don't think that he's ever been confused with being a genius.
which we saw early on with spiking the ball at the five in his rookie season.
A little early. A little early. Hadn't crossed yet. the Pats and Rex Burkhead restructured the deal so they free up a little bit more money. Is that just for flexibility, or do you think, I mean, I know it's late in the game, but do they have anything else up their sleeve at this point?
I think they're probably in a position where if somebody gets hurt in camp, you have to bring someone in.
Yeah.
So you have to have that extra cushion. And the Burkhead thing really is just a reshuffling, as I think you probably understood. They cut something down to signing bonus and gave him per-game roster bonuses. So it's a savings of $500,000. So it doesn't really, to me, rise to the level of a pay cut, which if Julian Edelman gave back $1 million or $2 million or Patrick Chung or Stephon Gilmore, I would look at that more as a pay cut. This, to me, is more of a bookkeeping to empty out space in case you need to sign a swing tackle, for instance.
Final question before we let you go. We know that Cam Newton was in New England, presumably to get the physical done and get the contract taken care of. Can we expect to see Instagram videos of Cam Newton throwing footballs with receivers here very soon?
I don't know if he's got a place yet. So we'll have to see. I mean, we're in a better
spot live with
than
me.
Carolina.
I'll invite him over. He can stay with me.
Yeah.
I'll welcome him.
You welcome him. I mean, next thing you know, you're wearing overalls and short suits.
Oh,
and
yeah. I could use some fashion help. I'm not going to deny that.
Yeah, you could.
I could.
So I would presume, I mean, it's better to be up here than down there, and he's got to get himself a place. The other interesting thing, too, Dale, with the logistics, it's, what the hell is it, July 8th? 7th?
Yeah, it's the quarantine thing, the two-week quarantine before the start of training camp.
Yeah, so guys will need to start getting up here fairly shortly, especially the rookies who potentially, and nothing is etched in stone, were hoped to begin reporting on July 15th. So we're really closing in on it here, and it is by the seat of the pants, but there's no guidebook either. So I don't get rankled by it as much as we've seen with the other sports and teams. How can you not have your house in order? Because you're trying to move a battleship in a zigzag fashion. It's just impossible to do.
Tom, we always appreciate the time. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, guys. Have a great week.
Thanks, Tom. You too.
Hey, pal. Tom E. Curran, NBC Sports Boston. I mean, again, supposedly, if you come into the state, you're required to quarantine for 2 weeks. And if you're looking at, you know, today's the 7th, 2 weeks from today is the 21st. I think training camp report date's the 26th, to Tom's point.
Right.
Players who, and not that many live here, actually. I mean, there are some who do, but not that many. They're going to have to start getting back in here this week, I think.
I think so. And I bet you'll get some Instagram stuff. I mean, Cam Newton's no stranger to the Instagram, so
he's pretty good at it, too. I got to give him credit, man.
If he's having a toss with Edelman or, I mean, Edelman's good on Instagram, too. So between Edelman and Sanu and all those guys and N'Keal Harry, they're no strangers to posting workout videos and pictures. So
Will you replace the sword videos on your Instagram account with you having a toss in the backyard with Cam Newton when he's staying with you?
I'd run routes for Cam Newton. Now, I'm not going to get there as fast as maybe I used to, but I'd whatever he wants. Maybe you can, Shime can come over and snap. You can snap it to Cam. And
I got a good shotgun snap.
That'd be great. Yeah, he's more than welcome to stay at my house if he's looking for a spot. Not super close to Gillette. Dale, you're closer to Gillette, so maybe you can
I've got a spare room.
Yeah, done.
I'm happy to have him stay here if he wants.
Works for me.
And I could also use some fashion tips.
Yeah.
Let's be honest.
All of a sudden, he changes your whole wardrobe. It'd be great.
He can have my house. I'll go sleep in the shed.
Okay, there you go.
617-779-7937 is the telephone number. Text line is 37937. It's Dale and Keefe, and it's time to trend.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice cold reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter.
Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Back to Dale and Keith on WEEI.
If there's no preseason games, who does that benefit more, Cam Newton or Jarrett Stidham?
It would probably benefit Stidham more if there was no opportunity at all for the Patriots to see Cam Newton playing in full contact 11-on-11 against another team.
I'll give you the opportunity to disagree with him, because I agree with Tom that if you could have joint workouts with another team, that would be most helpful.
Sure.
I think Belichick likes those more than preseason games. That's now gone. If you go from, well, you've gone from four preseason games down to two, most feel you're going to go to zero. I think that does make it more difficult for Cam Newton to get himself assimilated into this offense quicker. And it probably does give Stidham a better chance to start week one.
See, I think Newton has 125 NFL games experience where really I think the team just needs to see that he's healthy. I'm also going to assume that he takes to the playbook better than Chad Johnson did, but I think that's a pretty fair assumption.
Sure.
And I think
most people feel that he's probably fine. I mean, he looks great.
And so, but that was one of the big issues, I think, maybe that why it took him so long to sign, not only finding the right spot, but, you know, he did only play two games last year. So if in practice he's healthy, I feel like he is already the starter. And I know that we had this debate yesterday with Wiggy, and it's not that Belichick is just giving somebody like an unearned job, but at the same time, Hoyer, Stidham, and Newton, none of them have won the job yet. And so I think that you have the guy who is the best being Cam Newton. You sort of pencil him in there, but there's no opportunity for him to look really bad in preseason games, or the opposite of Stidham looking really good. I'm like, oh, my, this guy's got a great grasp of the offense. Let's go with him. Because I also think it'd be
difficult. I think Newton's going to be able to obviously grasp this offense. He's
right.
A very talented first overall draft pick caliber player. But the timing of it, I think, is going to make it tough. I mean, there were no OTAs. There were no passing mini camps. There's really virtually nothing until they set foot on the field for the first day of training camp. And as Tom pointed out, with the rules in place, even those practices are limited.
But I think the playbook is going to be different than it had been with Brady.
That's fair.
You know, yep. And I think that sort of puts Stidham's potential advantage kind of goes away a little bit. You know, because if it was just about knowing the plays, then Hoyer is probably even ahead of Stidham. But if it's all kind of, all right, we're going to go with, you know, some of the stuff that works that we can run with all quarterbacks, but no matter who the quarterback is, he's going to be able to move a little bit more. So we're going to change up some of our plays anyway. And I just think it's also, I think it'd be difficult, not that it'd be unprecedented, but would you start Stidham, his first two career starts, week one and two, and then you're like, all right, Newton's ready now, and then toss him to the bench? Like, I think that's tough, and that's why I thought, you know, Hoyer might have had an opportunity to start week one, because it's a lot easier to replace the old guy with the young guy than replacing the young guy, because it seems like you're kind of giving up on him.
Even granted that, and I agree with you, I think that the playbook, quote-unquote, was going to be different for Stidham / Newton than it was for Brady. It makes sense that it would be different. But do you have to simplify the playbook even more if the guy you're starting in week one literally has been with you and around your team for 4 weeks?
Yeah, you probably do, and I think that's fine. Like I think if that guy is that much better, then you can run less of the playbook and still have success. And then as the season goes on, you're sort of adding a little bit more, and now you become a little bit more dangerous. We've seen for years, not in Brady's case per se, but just we've seen the Patriots have those slow starts and then all of a sudden really get things going. Like everybody else kind of like the defense gets better. You know, other guys besides Brady get better. And if that's the case with Newton, I mean, unless it's so drastic, unless it's, hey, we feel like Stidham can run everything we call, we're not really sure about Newton. Like, unless that's the case, I think Cam Newton is the guy. But not, and I also think that, to me, the no preseason games kind of helps that, because you might side with just overall NFL experience.
And theoretically, couldn't Josh just copy a lot of what North Turner did in Carolina with Cam in 2018, just so that Cam that has a bunch of
But then
plays.
You're asking the whole team to assimilate a new playbook as
but
well.
But they are going to be doing new stuff.
Yeah, right, everybody's going to have to adjust right. without Brady anyways. Whether it's Stidham or Cam at quarterback, everyone else is adjusting around you
and
anyways.
And you figure, you know, N'Keal Harry played in like 8 games with this team. Sanu played in like 8 games. The tight ends are brand new. So you're going to have some guys that are learning some new things anyway. So I think, I wouldn't be surprised.
And
if
then the one guy that would have to basically relearn everything is probably the best guy apt for the job, which is Julian Edelman.
Yeah, I think he'll figure it out. Like, just line up here and get open. Cam will try to hit you. That's kind of the playbook.
I found your discussion with Tom that included Joe Flacco to be interesting.
Yeah, I'll tell you, because it sounds like Tom would like to, and the Patriots have done a pretty good job for this for years, kind of
not doing it until you had to do it, sort of thing.
Well, no, but the whole idea of spreading out your money throughout the team, right? And I think that's sort of easier said than done, because basically, I was asking him, so what would you do with Mahomes? Mahomes is the highest paid guy in sports now. He's the best player in football, and he's super young. So what would you do him? And it sounds like, in Tom's view, not, I don't want to put words in his mouth, but it kind of sounded like it's almost a burden to have that guy, because you're then tasked with asking other guys, or I'm sorry, other guys are asking you now, well, hey, you paid him, why don't you pay me? And now that, you know, you're going to have a hard time with that and the percentage of the cap and everything else. But the two examples that he used don't really sway me. One was, well, look what happened with the Ravens and Flacco. And right. I'm like, come on, that's such a slap in the face to Mahomes to compare him to Joe Flacco.
Yeah, I preferred my Peyton Manning Indianapolis Colts example.
Peyton Manning was at one point the best player in the league, like Patrick Mahomes was. Not the case for Flacco. And then he also mentioned Tom Brady being the highest paid quarterback only once. That's pretty unique. How many times in the history of sports going forward, are we going to have the best player not getting top dollar? That's very rare. So if you're hanging your hat on do it the way Tom Brady did or Joe Flacco is a cautionary tale, like, that's not good enough. If you have the best player, you're going to have to pay him, and then you're going to have to figure the other stuff out. And so you're like, oh, well, he's eating up so much percentage of the cap. You're like, okay, but doesn't he also make guys around him a lot better? So you're going to have to make some tough decisions, you know, whether it's Travis Kelce or Tyreek Hill or some of these other guys. And you say, all right, how much of this is them? How much of this is Mahomes? And it's also not like you can't afford other guys. I mean, when Peyton Manning was playing with the Colts, they had two of the 5 best wide receivers in the league. They had a Hall of Fame running back at one point. They had a pretty good O-line. Now, their knock was they didn't pay a ton of guys on defense, but some of it was more injuries. Like, Bob Sanders was a really good player.
Yep.
The one year that he was able to stay healthy, they won a Super Bowl. And then other times that, you know, they were just riddled with injuries. But I don't know. I'd pay. It's a ton of money. I get it. But he's the best player. So you have to pay him. Would you rather let him go and say, well, at least now we can balance out the.
No.
But then you're looking for a quarterback. Like, that's the worst place to be in.
And you're probably not going to find another one like him.
No. I don't think so. At least not right now. There are some other good quarterbacks. But guess what? Russell Wilson's not going anywhere. Maybe Deshaun Watson does go somewhere, but he's going to command a lot of money too. So it's not like you're going to be saving a ton if you were able to somehow get him in free agency because you didn't want to pay Patrick Mahomes.
So last night I put up one of these quickie Twitter polls, and I said, which of the 4 major sports has the best chance of completing the season? The NHL, and I have obviously a higher NHL fan base Twitter follower anyway. NHL led with 51%, followed by the NFL at 24%, MLB at 13%, the NBA at only 12% of people who think that they'll be able to finish the season. I found it interesting that the president of the NFL Players Association, J.C. Tretter from the Cleveland Browns, he put out a release today. He said the NFL's unwillingness to follow the recommendations of its own experts will put this season and the safety of all players at risk. This year must look differently if we hope to play a full season and crown a Super Bowl champion. And here's the paragraph in his release that jumped out at me. Every decision this year that prioritizes normalcy over innovation, custom over science, or even football over health significantly reduces our chances of completing the full season. This is the president of the Players Association who's wondering whether or not you're going to be able to get this thing done under the rules that the NFL is putting in place.
Yeah, and then the NFL, I think, was planning on a response, right? I guess I saw Tom Pelissero had a tweet saying the NFL isn't commenting on the president's post, but a league source called it, quote, very disappointing and contrary to the sense of collaboration going back to the early days of mid-March, pointing to agreements that they had made on joint practices, no fans at camp protocols, etc. So, I mean, every one of these sports is sort of dealing with it. My one fear with the NFL is the closer you get to stuff happening, that's when players... Like, players should have been following along the whole time, but they're probably like, ah, it's a ways away. Like, we'll see what happens.
Right,
and then, like, we saw it in the NBA where it was so clear that, hey, you guys knew we were discussing this for a while, right? And now all of a sudden you have, like, the same concerns you would have had 3 weeks ago or you could have brought up then, but now here we are. So I wonder if you start to get towards camp or you start to get towards, hey, the schedule's going to happen. We're going to do this. And, you know, once guys start showing up at the facilities and practicing and they say, well, this is not what I thought it was going to be.
We've already heard some players, Devin McCourty here being among them, who has stated some reluctance to perhaps play under the conditions as is out there right now. We've had people say, I don't know. And I wondered, to your point, as you get closer to this, as guys look more closely at what the rules and regulations are, if they, like J.C. Treader, go, this doesn't look safe to me.
Yeah, I think it's going to be one of those things like the other sports where, all right, do you have guys that have already made all their money, right? I mean, or, you know, that's going to be a lot easier for them to not do it. The one thing that the NFL, at least as of right now, has that baseball doesn't is these guys are on track to get their full salaries. So, you know, a $4 million player this year is going to get $4 million,
yep.
Not 1.2 or whatever it would have been the baseball equivalent. So I think you're going to have a higher percentage of the buy-in in football. Plus, it's such a sport where, you know, the careers are so short. You know, you mentioned it's the most dangerous one anyway. So, like, these guys are, this is a different type of risk, but they're used to risk. And so I think you're going to have a higher percentage of players in the NFL willing to do it. Maybe a little apprehensive at first, but I think they'd be more willing to do it than, say, what we've seen from baseball already.
And I know that he's the president of the Players Association, but I assume J.C. Treader is speaking as an individual. But how much weight does he carry in his organization?
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see what kind of, I mean, I'm sure starting as soon as now, you're going to see guys either coming out in support of or saying, like, we disagree. So we'll probably find that answer out soon.
617-779-7937 is the telephone number. We talked yesterday about the fact that Harvard probably will not be able to play football in the fall. And we said at the time, this may be a precursor for things throughout the Ivy League. We'll talk about that when we come back. Still to come, Kiefer Madness at 12:30. Our Dale and Keefe Movie Club review comes up at 1:45. It's Dale and Keefe, Sports Radio, WEEI.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At-Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At-Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Now back.
Don't bleep and sugarcoat this, Arnold.
To Dale and Keefe.
Why are we yelling?
This is WEEI.
We talked yesterday during the show, Rich, about Harvard and limiting the number of students who will be allowed on campus in the fall, keeping it at 40%. And I'm giving the overview here, but it's something along the lines of, like, freshmen, sophomores and seniors allowed on campus in the fall, freshmen, juniors and seniors in the spring, you know, leaving out an entire class of students who will not be allowed on campus. It called into question whether or not Harvard could play football this fall. The Ivy League will make an announcement reportedly tomorrow. And multiple coaches from the Ivy League told The Athletic over the weekend that they expect the announcement tomorrow will be the league is moving all fall sports, including football, to the spring of 2021. Believe it or not, although most people would say, who cares what the Ivy League does, there are Power Five commissioners now who are saying, you know what, we need to probably figure some things out here. SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey said probably a late July time period to figure out whether or not we can go forward. Even the SEC is wondering whether they can play football in the fall here this year.
Yeah, I think looking at the Ivy League is not crazy because they were the first ones to cancel their college basketball conference tournament. this was, remember in the early stages of all of this, they weren't sure if things were going to go on. Some teams were playing. They started a bunch of tournaments, but the Ivy League was the first one to pull the plug. And then eventually, again, some did get started, but eventually everybody pulled the plug, and then they canceled the NCAA tournament as well. So for them, setting up a spring football thing could lead to, like you say, others doing it. And that's where the moneymakers are, the SEC, the Big Ten, the ACC, the Pac-12, the Big 12.
Pac-12 commissioners already called into question whether or not it's safe to play football this fall.
Yeah, so how would spring football work? I think you're going to have some issues because are you going to force Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields and other top guys to have to play a season in what, March, April, May? Is that what the spring would look like? I don't even know. Presumably
you're not going to ask Harvard to play football in February in Boston.
Because you graduate in May, right?
Yep.
And so, normally it's September, October, November, December, bowl games in January. So I'm not exactly sure what the timetable would be, but there's rules in place in the NFL that you need to be out of high school for 3 years. So, juniors, redshirt sophomores, those guys can declare for the draft. But that's when the sport is in the fall, and then you prepare for the draft, which happens, in April. So that's tricky. Are you going to delay the whole NFL calendar, too? Or are you going to force to do that? Or are you going to allow those top guys to sit out? Otherwise, they could be suing the NCAA and everything like that to try to, get out there. They don't want to play extra games. So I don't know. I don't know what it's going to look like, but it sounds like maybe we will have college football this year. It's just going to look, not this calendar year, but it'll look a little bit different.
Here's something I hadn't even thought of. It makes total sense. When I read it, I thought, God, why didn't I think of this? The athletic director at West Virginia said one of the issues facing a lot of these smaller schools is cost. He said it will cost anywhere from $20,000 to $25,000 a week to test sports for COVID-19.
Happen is you could eliminate the non-Power Fives.
Right.
Alabama and
Clemson, Alabama's got the money. They can handle it. West Virginia, he's saying $20,000 to $25,000 a week at my school is a lot of money.
See, I think even they have a chance. They're in the Big 12. They don't have the same TV contract that the SEC does, but there's plenty of money, at least for those majors. After that, because you always hear stories about teams that lose money having to play in the bowl games and things like that. It's not always a moneymaker for, some of the lesser schools. But, yeah, they're all going to have issues. We could definitely see a scenario where, 120 D1 schools that, maybe 50 of them play or something. I wouldn't rule anything out because you got to get creative. You got to try to do it as safe as possible. Yet at the same time, money is going to try to push some of this stuff through, just like we're going to see in the NFL. You're going to see it with the major five conferences too.
It's easy, as I said, to kind of dismiss the Ivy League because, how many NFL prospects are coming out of the Ivy League on a regular basis. But to your point, I think they might be the precursor to others out there, that other schools are looking at the Ivy League and the Patriot League, some of the D2 and D3 schools that have already put the kibosh on athletics for the fall. And they're saying, maybe we can't do this as safely as we hoped.
Well, you think about how many major D1 colleges are just in Florida, Texas, and California. It's a ton. The Big 12 is in Texas. The Pac-12 is basically in California. Florida has ACC and SEC schools. It's loaded with schools like that. And if their numbers are high, or if the second surge comes back and it's really significant in those states that it had been before, then it's going to be really difficult to pull it off in the fall.
I hate to say it because, we're all hoping for the return of sports. It may be hard for a lot of these colleges to pull this thing off. And then you see the idiocy going on in Tuscaloosa.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And this involves, in large part, athletes.
Well, it's tough. I knew right away that colleges were going to be the most difficult thing to pull off. Professional sports have such a better chance at coming back.
They got
back.
A lot of money riding on
so
it.
So much money, less teams. You're paying these guys so you can say, hey, we're going to a bubble, or we're doing this, and these are all the protocols. And so much money, and I know there is in college football too, but just with these pro teams, if we got to test them every day, we test them every day. If we got to do this, we got to do that, we can pull it off. college sports is a whole lot different, especially when you factor in if some of these campuses are closed and now you just have the football team is in. Like, that's not going to fly in a lot of places. So they have so many more hurdles to jump over than the pro leagues do.
617-779-7937 is the telephone number. Coming up at 12:30, we've got Kiefer Madness. When we come back, we'll talk about the richest contract in pro sports history. Maybe. You know, at least it's billed that way today. And more pressure now being applied to the NFL, not just about the nickname of the football team in Washington, but others as well. We'll talk about that when we come back. It's Dale and Keefe, Sports Radio, WEEI.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.